2 years,
yes,
or a year and a half.
It's been great.
And some people are not aware of your work, and you're the senior researcher at MIT.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to just say a little bit about the work that you've been doing?
Sure, yes. I've been working in, I'm trained to be a computer scientist, but I have an undergraduate degree in biology from MIT, and I love biology, and I've always enjoyed continuing to keep it up through the years. So my work involves processing online materials, both databases and literature and things like that, using natural language techniques and also computer science statistical techniques. And you can really dig a lot of information out of both databases and, you know, just plain text to discover interesting things. And so over the past about 8 years, I've been using those skills to look at medical issues and their relationships to toxic chemicals in the environments. I've looked at the VARS database, for example, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and looked at health data, for example, the hospital discharge data, and mm-hmm. online blog posts about statin drug side effects, all kinds of interesting material that you can find on the web and analyze, and then discover really interesting facts about biology and about sick illness and toxic chemicals and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be talking today about, you know, what you've been uncovering recently, your latest research.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
And let's first talk about glyphosate,
okay,
which is the main ingredient in Roundup, and why you've been studying the health effects of glyphosate.
Great, yes, and of course this goes back. I got interested in autism long ago, but it was about 8 years ago that I got really interested because I saw that the rates were rising exponentially, and I know exponential growth is going to end up devastating if you let it keep going. I knew it had to be environmental toxins, so I was looking at everything I could come up with and seeing what else is going up in step with autism. I identified aluminum, and I looked hard at aluminum because that has been increasing. Our exposure has been increasing, and it is, in fact, linked to autism. I wrote papers about that, but I was frustrated because about 6 years ago, I knew there were many things in autism that I couldn't explain by the chemicals that I had identified. There was something missing. And that was when I heard Don Huber talk. He's a professor, retired professor from Purdue, expert on plant physiology. And he has become aware of the dangers of glyphosate and the fact that we don't believe it because it's so pervasive. The industry has painted glyphosate as the perfect herbicide. And they claim that mm-hmm. it is non-toxic to humans because we don't have the pathway that it disrupts. It's a very nice story, but it turns out to be true that we don't have the pathway, but false that it's not toxic to us. And in fact, it's an amazing molecule with so many layers of toxicity that it's really astonishing. And it has allowed me to really figure out a lot about human physiology and about the role of gut microbes in health and a lot of interesting things. So it's been a wonderful research project to tease all this out. But then very, very disturbing, as I can see, that glyphosate mm-hmm. explains so many diseases, not just autism, obesity, diabetes, Alzheimer's, various gut problems, you know, inflammatory bowel and celiac disease, all of these things, ADHD, you know, and the allergies and the asthma that the kids are coming up with, all of these things I think are connected to the exposure to glyphosate. Of course, it's not just in the water, in the air, it's in the food.
Yeah.
And the food is maybe the most important source of the mm-hmm. glyphosate because there's all these GMO Roundup ready crops that are form the basis of the processed food industry, the corn, the soy, the canola, the sugar beets. These are all engineered to tolerate Roundup, which allows them to be very efficient in the growing of these crops. Just spray the Roundup from the air, not worrying about the fact that you're spraying it all over the plant. The plant soaks it up and it gets into the food. And then we're not adequately measuring to see if that's the case. So we don't actually know, but I am suspecting it very strongly.
Yes, and even beyond the GMO crops, Roundup is just everywhere.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. People go down to the hardware store, they kill their weeds with it. They could mm-hmm. be handling it very carelessly because, again, they think it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people are getting ill because of their exposure during their own use of the product on their lawns.
Right. And then, you know, I think that a lot of it comes in the meat industry because, you know, mm-hmm. they're feeding animals these grains.
Absolutely.
These
and
GMO
in fact, the residue limits that the government allows mm-hmm. for the animals is much, much higher than the limit that they require for the human food. And then it gets into the meat because people have actually shown that it shows up in the muscle tissue, for example, of chickens. They've shown glyphosate in the urine for piglets that were born deformed, and they showed that, you know, they suspected strongly that the deformities were linked to the glyphosate.
Mm-hmm. Right. So tell us about, you know, what you've been finding about, you know, how glyphosate interacts in the body.
Right. It's such a long story at this point. It keeps getting longer and longer. But I'll tell the short part first, which is the gut microbes. That's where it hits first. You eat it in the food. It disrupts your microbes in your gut. And people are now realizing, really, there's a lot of exciting research going on now with papers published looking at the gut microbiome, they call it. And they're realizing how important the gut microbes are to our health. If they're not healthy, we're not healthy. And glyphosate particularly hits hard at lactobacillus. And lactobacillus is the key microbe that gets you started in life. Because when you're born, you're drinking milk. These guys love milk. Lacto, you can imagine, that's lactose, which is milk.
Mm-hmm.
And they depend upon milk to be healthy. But they also are a very interesting microbe that depends upon manganese. They use manganese instead of iron. And they use manganese to protect themselves from reactive oxygen species, sort of free radicals that can cause damage. And glyphosate chelates manganese and makes it unavailable to them, and so they become sick. And then when they can't grow, they have the job of keeping in check all the pathogens. So when they can't grow, the pathogens have a chance to take off. And then you get an overgrowth of things like C. difficile. You can get salmonella infections, Pseudomonas aeruginosa. There's all these different microbes that can grow in large numbers because of the disruption of the lactobacillus.
Right, and then that causes inflammation.
Exactly.
in the intestinal lining, and then leaky gut syndrome or intestinal permeability, which can lead to all kinds of...
Right, and it goes straight to the brain with the gut-brain access. Mm-hmm. Then the foods get into the blood, get into the brain, and you get a leaky brain barrier as well, and then you get all these toxins getting introduced into the brain, and that, of course, causes a lot of brain damage.
Right, so... glyphosate is called the bacterial side.
Yeah.
And is it because of this that you're describing, how it disrupts manganese, that the lactobacillus
yes.
is then killed, or is there another
I think that's a key piece. Manganese is a key mm-hmm. piece. Actually, manganese, papers have said that the reason, so I said glyphosate disrupts the chicken mate pathway. The chicken mate pathway exists in essentially all plants and many microbes, including lactobacillus.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't work that pathway, then they won't be healthy. Furthermore, the product of that pathway is amazing. It's these aromatic amino acids, which we can't make. We don't have the pathway. We can't make those molecules. We depend upon our gut microbes to provide them to us, and they are precursors to really important neurotransmitters, things like serotonin, melatonin, dopamine. You know, all these basic neurotransmitters depend upon the chicken mate pathway in our gut microbiome. So we're deficient in serotonin, and that explains a lot of things. It's linked to autism. It's linked to violent behavior, depression, mm-hmm. obesity. All of these things are tied to serotonin deficiency.
Mm-hmm. Right. And sleeplessness.
Right. Insomnia. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, so tell us more about how glyphosate is linking to autism in your research.
Yeah, well, the manganese is a big part of it. And in fact, Anthony Sampson and I have published two papers. One was a general paper on glyphosate toxicity. The second one was on celiac disease, which we link through the wheat, glyphosate being sprayed on the wheat right before the harvest. Our third paper has just been accepted for publication. We're very excited.
Mm-hmm.
So it will appear within the next couple of weeks, I think, on manganese. And so I didn't think to look at manganese until I found out. I read an article by some German folks on studying cows, and they looked at different minerals that were deficient in the blood in the cows exposed to glyphosate in their feed, and they identified two, cobalt and manganese. And manganese was severely below the lower limit of the range in all the cows they looked at on eight mm-hmm. different farms. So it was like, okay, manganese is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's explained, because that is the key mineral that is chelated by glyphosate and causes the problems with the lactobacillus. So I didn't really know at that point what does manganese do, but once you start looking, you realize that it explains a lot of things, because manganese protects the mitochondria from these radicals, free radicals. So if you don't have enough manganese in the mitochondria, you'll start getting DNA mutations there. You'll get the proteins that are produced won't work properly. You'll get mitochondrial dysfunction. Mitochondria are the energy source. So they're the guys who take the glucose in and turn it into carbon dioxide, mm-hmm. and produce energy, ATP. So when they're not working, all the cells are in really big trouble. So they need the manganese to stay safe. They start getting sick. And that's how you get Alzheimer's. That's how you get autism. That's linked. You know, these are, many of these neurological diseases are linked to mitochondrial dysfunction. So that's a very easy connection. Manganese is also important for making chondroitin sulfate, which is essential for healthy bones and healthy joints. And we've got, osteomalacia, osteoporosis, all these issues with bones, people falling. We have a lot of elderly people getting injured by frequent falls, mm-hmm. sort of weak bones, weak joints. And, of course, the calcium's getting sucked out of the bones and thrown into the arteries. We're getting calcified arteries. I think that's all a consequence of the manganese deficiency preventing the bones from being healthy, mm-hmm. for example. Mm-hmm. And then I'm forgetting what the other one is with the manganese. Oh, glutamate is very important. Mm-hmm. Very, very important, actually. This one's critical, and I've been looking at this one a lot. It's more and more interesting as I study. Glutamate is very important in the brain. It's a neurotransmitter, but if you have too much of it, it becomes neurotoxic. And excess glutamate is associated with autism. Actually, they looked at all the different amino acids, and they found that glutamate was the one that was very significantly out of whack. They had too much glutamate and too little glutamine in their blood, these autistic kids, compared to normal controls. Glutamate is converted to glutamine by an enzyme that depends on manganese. So there you have exactly the manganese deficiency problem once again. Glutamate excitotoxicity in the brain has been explained as a proposal to explain autism damage in the brain. And also glutamate is contained in vaccines, particularly MMR and flu vaccine. And so I really worry about this emphasis on getting the flu vaccine, exposing kids to glutamate in the context of insufficient manganese is going to end up doing damage to their brains.
Right. And also in the vaccines, there's polysorbate 80, which I know crosses the blood-brain barrier.
Right. Yes. And in fact, all these surfactants, this is part of the problem with glyphosate. The industry has defined the rules of the game of how you test for safety to say you only test the active ingredient by itself, which is glyphosate. Then they're allowed to produce a product that will make the glyphosate much more toxic to plants than it would be acting by itself by adding other substances to it. And they have these things called surfactants, which are like this. This is what this polysorbate 80 is a surfactant, mm-hmm. which basically make the membranes of the cells much more permeable and allow things to get in. So when you put the surfactant in with the glyphosate gets into the cell and does the damage. So they don't have to test it in that context. In fact, when they review, when the regulators review the literature, they automatically throw away any paper that, for example, is studying Roundup instead of glyphosate because it doesn't follow the rules. And I think that is incredible. Papers have shown up to 1,000 times greater toxicity of the active ingredient when it's in the context of these added surfactants, which are added to make it more toxic to plants. So it makes sense that it would be more toxic to us as well.
And are they labeled, what the additives
are? You can't even know what they are. They're under patent control.
Wow.
Yes.
That's just incredible.
That is amazing. And, in fact, Anthony and I are doing some sleuthing lately on oxalate, and it's looking very interesting because we're getting an epidemic in kidney stones, which is caused, 80% of them are caused by oxalate. Mm-hmm. And we found Monsanto patents talking about how great oxalate is as an additive to make glyphosate more toxic to the plants. Then they introduced a new product, Weathermax, in 2005, 2006. It really picked up in Canada. Farmers loved it because it worked so well to kill the weeds and kind of kept in check the weeds that were developing resistance to glyphosate. And we're suspecting the oxalate is in that product, and that's when the kidney stones started showing up. So it kind of all fits, but we can't prove it because of the patent.
Because we don't know what's really in there.
That's right.
That's incredible.
I know.
Do you want to talk more about fructose?
I do. Thank you. Yeah, very interesting. And I've been fascinated by fructose. There's been a lot of talk about fructose lately. In fact, it's Lustig. Have you, Dr. Lustig? Do you know that name?
I don't.
I think that that's the right name. I have trouble with names. He's written a lot of stuff about fructose being toxic in the liver, and that when there's too much fructose, the liver has to take the fructose out and convert it into fat, And then this ends up with a lot of extra fat that the liver can't quite get rid of, so it ends up piling it up in the liver and producing fatty liver. So you have this non-alcoholic steatosis, steatohepatitis, NASH, mm-hmm. is becoming an epidemic. And he claims it's because of too much fructose in the diet. Now, fructose, of course, is the fruit is the sugar in fruit,
mm-hmm.
and fruit is considered a very healthy thing, and it should be. It should be healthy. And so there's a question of why is it all of a sudden that there's this problem with fructose? Just like why is it all of a sudden everybody's allergic to wheat, you know? Mm-hmm. It's another one of those examples of the new normal where all of a sudden things that used to be fine are no longer fine. You know, we've got a lot of people talking about sugar being toxic more generally, not just fructose, but sugar. When you look at sugar, you've got the sugar beets that are Roundup ready. You've got the sugar cane that's sprayed with Roundup right before the harvest. And you've got the high fructose corn syrup, which has additional fructose, more fructose than the others, and which is produced from Roundup Ready corn. So they're all going to have glyphosate in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the toxicity they're seeing in fructose or in fruits, sugars in general, is maybe mostly linked to the toxic chemicals that are in it. Now, the fructose is extremely interesting, and I've been figuring it out only recently. This is new material. And that goes back to the shikimate pathway, if I'm right. Now, this is theoretical, but very logical. The shikimate pathway, the step that glyphosate disrupts, starts with a molecule called phosphoenolpyruvate, PEP. And that molecule is then converted eventually to these aromatic amino acids that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So if that pathway is busted, the PEP will pile up because it can't get converted. It'll grow in excess. So then you look at PEP, well, where does it come from? How is it made? And you find, lo and behold, it comes from fructose. So fructose mm-hmm. can be converted to PEP, and that's a very common pathway that the microbes in the gut use to metabolize fructose. And so they're converting it eventually into these aromatic amino acids, which are very good for you and very useful because of the serotonin and all those things. But they can't do that because of glyphosate.
Ah. So the gut microbes normally are going to process the fructose.
And turn it into something extremely useful to us that we can't make.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't do that, you know, because the poison's in the way.
Wow.
Instead, the PEP piles up. When it piles up, it actually suppresses the processing of fructose. There's always this sort of product inhibition. It's a very common feature of enzymes. So fructose doesn't go anywhere in the gut. It just goes straight to the liver. So instead of the fructose being managed by the gut microbes, all of it ends up being the liver's problem. Fructose is extremely strong as a glycating agent, 10 times worse than glucose. And glycating agents are things that cause the problems in diabetes. That's how you get your proteins gummed up with sugars. You get this glycation damage.
So it's damage.
Yeah, right? It damages the proteins.
People understand.
Yeah, the fructose damages the proteins, the same as glucose does, and the whole problem with high blood sugar is 10 times worse if that sugar is fructose. So mm-hmm. in general...
And it leads to cataracts, for
exactly,
example.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, the proteins
damage
get damaged and then they don't work. And even
mm-hmm.
the red blood cells have trouble. The hemoglobin gets damaged. Hemoglobin A1C is the thing you measure to see if you have diabetes. That's an example mm-hmm. of glycation.
Mm-hmm. And his name, by the way, is Dr. Robert Lustig. L-U-S.
Oh, right.
T-I-G.
Lustig. What did I say?
That was pretty close.
Okay. Sorry about that.
You said Lustig. And I was thinking, was it Lustig?
L-U-S-T-I-G. I was just.
Thank you. Great. So. I was close.
You were extremely close.
Yeah. So then you end up with this damaged protein. Hemoglobin gets damaged. That makes it harder for it to transport oxygen, so you get oxygen deprivation, and that, of course, causes another whole set of things. The liver, then, is burdened with all this extra fructose, and if it can't get it all out because it's got other things to do, that's when you get high fructose in the blood, and then that causes all this damage. And meanwhile, the liver piles up all this fat because it has to convert the fructose to fat since the gut microbes are sleeping on their job.
And when the liver is dealing with glucose or sucrose, how is that different?
It's very different. In fact, it's interesting that glucose actually responds to insulin. Fructose doesn't need insulin to get in. I mean, it's sort of like it'll just go in regardless. If you don't have enough insulin, then the glucose, it depends on insulin to activate glucose entry. And glucose is less dangerous than fructose, as I said, so it's okay to let it get by. In fact, it's good because it's a really good source of fuel for the brain. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to have some, it's good to have some. If your glucose is too low, you can go into a coma. You know, so the liver doesn't have
right.
to get the glucose out. It can just let it go on and feed the rest of the cells. It's a really good fuel for them, actually, especially for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the fructose, because of its additional reactivity, the liver feels responsible to get it out, because it's the liver's job to take care of all the neurotoxins, all of the toxic chemicals before they get into the mainstream.
Right. So can you say again, in a normal gut microbes, lactobacillus, what they're going to convert fructose into if they're working normally?
Yes, PEP, which is phosphoenol pyruvate, is the first step. And then the PEP goes into the shikimate pathway to produce these aromatic amino acids, which is tyrosine, tryptophan, and phenylalanine.
Ah.
And those are the precursors to serotonin and dopamine. And,
of course.
And also thyroid hormone.
The neurotransmitters.
Thyroid hormone. And also NAD. NAD is really an important molecule. And vitamin E, I mean, a lot of things. Vitamin K, all of these are derived from that shikimate pathway.
Wow, it's amazing how it's all connected to the gut microbes. Huh?
It is incredible. You know, and you see all these different things that are issues now, and you look back and you say, well, of course, you know, makes sense. Which is what's so wonderful about the research. It all makes sense.
I have a question, please, doctor, about fructose. When you're talking about fructose, are you talking about just eating the fruit, or are you talking about buying a package of fructose to bake your cookies with?
Yeah, well, there is a high fructose corn syrup, which is sort of like a pure chemical kind of fructose, which is obviously not as good as the fruit. Fruit, the fructose comes in context with all kinds of other things, including flavonoids. You know, these are, the fruit has and vitamin C. It has all these other things that are necessary to help process the fructose. So when you eat the whole fruit, it's much healthier than eating the pure high fructose corn syrup. But still, the fructose is fructose, and it will be a problem if you eat too much.
If you eat too much.
Yes.
And if you don't have the gut microbes.
Right, because of the glyphosate. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So
that even might be Steve Jobs' problem, because he ate tons and tons of fructose, of sugar, fruit. He was a fruit addict, Steve Jobs, and he died of pancreatic cancer at a young age. I suspect that may be connected.
Interesting. Now, let's talk about, since we're talking about fructose, let's talk about LDLs as well.
Right, right. Yeah. Very interesting, actually. I find it really fascinating with the LDL. Of course,
so that's cholesterol.
Right. Yes, low-density lipoprotein, and then there's also HDL, high-density, which is considered to be the good, and the LDL is considered to be the bad in terms of the terminology that the doctor will use when he measures your cholesterol. In this country, we're obsessed with the numbers, and people go into their doctor, it's slightly high, they put you on a statin drug.
Mm-hmm.
Big mistake, in my opinion, and we've talked about that before on this show.
Mm-hmm,
yeah, and in fact, what's really interesting to me, and I've looked at the hospital discharge data, and you can see rates of that you have all these different diseases that are reported, many things actually associated with one discharge. Every time anybody goes to the hospital, in these particular hospitals that are being monitored, each record has a list of diseases that they found in association with that visit. And one of the things that's going up alarmingly in step with glyphosate usage on corn and soy crops is LDL. So serum LDL levels, high LDL, is an epidemic. It's going up and up and up in step with glyphosate. And I think glyphosate is causal. And the reason gets back to the fructose, because when you have too much fat in the liver, you can either make fatty liver or you can ship that fat out in the form of these LDL particles. In which case, you're going to have it go up as you've got more and more fructose coming into the liver. So that makes perfect sense that it would cause the high LDL. And the other interesting thing is that heart attacks are actually going down. So when you look at the correlation between LDL and heart attack, it's not non-existent. They're completely unrelated, despite the fact that they assure you that by taking a statin drug, you will reduce your risk of heart attack by virtue of lowering your LDL.
So for people who don't necessarily understand science, or they're not, you know, how do we correlate? Can you just describe a little bit about, you know, how you come up with that correlation?
Right. Now, it's pretty easy, actually. It's from a computer science standpoint, it's very easy. You simply have to count the number of cases. You have to do some normalization with respect to the number of hospitals and whatnot in the population. But you can just look at the trend, the rate over time of some disease as measured by something like hospital discharge, or, for example, the rate of death. You can get death statistics. Those are useful, too. And you just plot that over time, and you get a curve. And then you can also get additional data on, for example, toxic chemicals. And so if you look at, and I've looked at a lot of different herbicides and pesticides, and the only one that's going up in step with all these diseases is glyphosate. You know, and, of course, everyone's screaming at me, correlation doesn't mean causation. This seems to be a mantra that people really want to believe. But correlation actually can mean causation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always mean causation. And certainly there are lots of things that are going up. But when you look at toxic pesticides, aluminum is going up and glyphosate is going up. And those two, I think, are very strongly linked to autism in terms of the way they their physiological effects. Makes a lot of sense, you know. Lead is going down, so I wouldn't be looking at lead to see if that was what was causing autism. Makes sense. You look at the things that are going up in step. Glyphosate is a perfect match with autism in first grade. Glyphosate usage on the corn and soy crops over the previous 4 years, which is a rough estimate of the exposure you might expect those kids to have in the in those last 4 years of their life, from the age of 2 to the age of 6. And you get a 0.997 correlation coefficient, which means that those two curves are essentially lining up.
Right, and it's not just autism. It's also dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's.
Parkinson's. There's some cancers involved, too. In fact, pancreatic cancer and thyroid cancer. Breast cancer is more complicated, and I've looked at breast cancer because I suspect that glyphosate is causing it, and I can see that from the literature on glyphosate. But breast cancer was going down up until about 2005, and then it's turned around, and now it's been sharply turning, going back up again. And if you correct for a hypothesis of reduced hormone therapy over time, because people are aware that it was causing breast cancer, that can account for the downdrift. If you take an exponential model to model that and subtract it out, then you get quite a strong correlation with glyphosate from the remainder, from the residue of the breast cancer curve. So that requires more processing to kind of tease it out. But I think this means that glyphosate is causal in breast cancer. And a paper showed parts per trillion concentrations of glyphosate cause tumor, breast cancer tumor cells to grow in vitro.
So it does happen.
Parts per trillion, which is really, really tiny. The parts per million is the levels that are regulated in the food.
Mm. So does glyphosate have an estrogenic effect some of the other environmental toxins?
Yes, I believe it does. And it's been shown, too, with studies in the... they've done a lot of studies on sperm and on testicles. I mean, basically, the damage to the reproductive system looks pretty clear in studies on frogs and and in vitro on human cells and things like that.
So back to the LDLs, and you were saying there's no correlation at all between LDLs and heart disease, and that's why you know, you go to the doctor and they're going to look at your cholesterol to see if you're healthy.
It's very weird that they'll tell you, you better take a statin drug or else you're going to get a heart attack because the statins are going to lower your LDL. Yes, I find that very amusing. And, of course, I've talked about statins. I think they are a very dangerous drug, causing a lot of health issues in the elderly and increasingly younger people because younger and younger people are taking them. It shocks me that they will prescribe statins to a young woman who's in... who is married and in the reproductive age, and they don't even think about the fact that it might cause toxicity to her fetus.
Do you want to talk about some of the side effects and detrimental effects of the cholesterol-lowering drugs?
Oh, yes. There's a huge list.
First, let me say that it is 12:30.
Oh, yes. We need to open up for questions.
And you're listening to Health Talk, the first and third Mondays of the month here at Kauai Community Radio, and good to see Dr. Donna Kaplan. It's been a while, and I'm glad you had a nice holiday. And
you too.
And your dad and your dad arrived today, huh?
Last night.
Oh, good, good.
He's going to be on the show next time.
Oh,
I think.
Good.
Wonderful.
Dr. Yu.
Dr. Yu.
He's great. Thank you. And good seeing you, Dr. Senna.
Yes, it's great to be here.
So, if you would like to open the phone lines, please do 826-7771 and 866-275-1112.
So we were going to talk about, you know,
statin drug side effects, which are huge muscle issues. I mean, extremely. We looked at data from blogs, from websites where they allow people to fill in their experience with a drug. We have a question. And so we saw a huge correlation with muscle damage, muscle pain, muscle weakness, which would link to falls, you know. And I've seen that elderly are really suffering a lot lately from falls. And I mentioned also that manganese deficiency causing a weakness in the bones and the joints. And so combined with the statin drug, it's really a double hit that's going to cause more, and falling is a very dangerous thing for an elderly person, so I think that's causing a tremendous amount of trouble.
All right.
And also the brain. Question?
Yes, we have some callers, so let's see. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Okay, I just happened to pull over and be hearing about what your topic is. I'm very interested in speaking with you because I am coming up to 60. I've been having incredibly high cholesterol levels, the bad ones. And I have, and I'm a thin person. I work out a lot. I do all the right things, eat all the right foods. And I have a question regarding, I understand chia seeds are a very good way, I read in an article, to bring down the cholesterol. But I want to know how, I just bought a bag of them.
What did you say?
Chia seeds.
Oh, chia seeds, right, yes.
Right, and I, you know, and my naturopath says, with the omegas, but believe it or not, I'm even in the medical profession, but when it comes to doing it naturally, what they want me to do is correspond to that, in a way. I'm not going to go that route. But as I say, I'm doing all the right things when it comes to health and exercise. And then I heard of this thing of soaking the chia seeds and having it in your fridge and using it on a regular basis. And can you give me some other options?
Yes, I would encourage you to get sun. I mean, here it's a great opportunity to get sunlight exposure, but make sure you're outside in the sun a lot without sunscreen and also without sunglasses. Getting sun exposure. You do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting that you have high cholesterol. It may be a genetic thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is I don't worry about high cholesterol, especially not if you're a woman. In fact, when you look at the curves for mortality, which is really the thing that matters, for women, mortality goes up as cholesterol is very low, you know, below about 60. It goes up sharply. More deaths for people, women who have very low cholesterol. When you look on the other side of the curve, it never goes up. It's flat all the way out to infinity. So in my opinion, as a woman, you never need to worry about high cholesterol. And in fact, it will help you in terms of avoiding Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you so very much. Of course, from the AMA, I get a whole other round of applause on taking medication. That's why I no longer work in acute care.
The more that you eat proteins and beneficial fats and vegetables and less of the carbohydrates, and eat them regularly, that'll stabilize your blood sugar levels.
Right, absolutely. So, a high-fat diet. And that's what people don't realize, even a high cholesterol diet. It's interesting because my husband was diagnosed with heart disease 8 years ago. And I've been encouraging him to eat a diet that's high in saturated fat and cholesterol. So he eats a lot of eggs. He's eaten, you know, gizzards. I mean, things that are really high in cholesterol, seafood. And he was afraid to get, he, of course, he has heart disease, so they're telling him, and he's not taking a statin drug, but his doctor, of course, thinks he should. And he was afraid to go get his numbers tested, but it turned out that by changing to a diet that had more cholesterol, his cholesterol levels actually went down.
Right.
So it's not connected, because actually the heart, it's interesting with the way cholesterol is processed in the body, it's packaged up in something called a chylomicron and shipped straight to the heart via the lymph system from the gut, so that the gut is actually making special effort to deliver to the heart what it considers to be the most important nutrient for the heart, which is the cholesterol and the saturated fat. I find that very, very interesting. The heart gets first dibs on that food that's delivered directly to it from the gut. And so when you eat cholesterol, your liver doesn't have to produce LDL, as much LDL, because your heart is getting it from the food instead. So people think that eating cholesterol is going to make their LDL go up, but that's not true.
Okay, now on the contrary, saying that, you're speaking to me, I'm telling you I'm a thin person and active. Is that the same rule of thumb for those out there that are going to say, oh, okay, I'm going to eat my cholesterol, and if they might be obese or overweight or whatever word we're using these days, or, that that same rule of thumb follow through with someone with body structure and who is not active, who is bedridden, who is not bedridden, but who is, you know, doesn't move.
I mean, I think obesity is more tied to eating carbohydrates than it is to eating fats. People think that eating fat makes you fat, but I think that's not true. And in fact, they've shown in many studies that when they compare a low-fat diet versus a high-fat diet, and they find that the people on the high-fat diet find it easier to lose weight if they're on a diet to lose weight than the ones on the low-fat diet, and to keep it off.
And I find that low-fat foods have a lot more sodium.
Yeah, I know. They have a lot more bad things, especially sugar, which is much worse. I mean, sugar is really bad for diabetes, which makes sense because that is a high sugar problem. It makes no sense to me why you would not try to reduce your sugar if you have diabetes.
Right. And the other thing is that so many are afraid to eat butter. They say, oh, margarine.
Butter is fantastic. And margarine, I don't touch margarine. I never have.
You know, and it's butter, like, it is just such a better nutrient, you know, and it's so much better for your heart.
Right, absolutely.
They're very, very, very on the contrary. You know, like, people are told by the doctors, you know, butter, I'm not saying all doctors, but from my 37 years of experience, and I hear it, I kind of try to guide them in a different route, and you might want to read about this, too.
Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Right, but I just wanted to know about the chia seeds. How do you believe that's the best way to...
do you have an opinion?
To produce them and how to incorporate them in your diet?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I do a lot of food testing with my patients clinically. So I'll use kinesiology and test foods to see if that person has sensitivities. And I have not found chia seeds to be beneficial for people. Usually chia seeds are toxic. I don't know why, but that's what I find clinically. I think conceptually, because it has protein, a lot of protein, it's a beneficial vegetable in that sense. But I'd have to say, you know, clinically, that's what I find with people is that chia seeds, even though it's really a health craze right now, don't seem to be great for people.
And I will say, actually, that I think a high-protein diet is dangerous because then you end up with excess nitrogen. If you're using protein for energy, you're going to have excess nitrogen, and nitrogen can be very toxic if there's too much. So you want to eat just enough protein to resupply your muscles. You know, you want it for building your body. You don't want it for energy. So you want to make sure to get enough fat to supply the energy so that you won't need to use the protein for energy.
I understand, and this has been a very good conversation for me because having had two fractures and been pretty much stagnant, but pardon me, stagnant, so I wasn't.
Interesting.
The thing is that I was told before we were on sculpt, 70-gram protein diet, and I just don't agree with that.
No, a high-protein diet is dangerous. And I worry about that because people think fats are bad, sugar is bad, I have to eat protein, and that's really a bad sign. I mean, that's not a good idea.
And to do that before we do any type of back surgery, and get on to, 70 to 80 grams of protein a day, and I'm like, wee, I don't think so.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, and you have a
good day.
You too.
Okay, I think we have another caller. Good afternoon.
A question is regarding the research of Dr. Weston Price.
Mm-hmm.
He discovered that the people who ate, for example, whole foods, and then people who ate specifically butter oil and fermented cod liver oil seemed to have pretty good health. Do you have any comments on that?
I do. I love Dr. Weston Price, and I love the Weston Price Foundation, which is founded on his principles. I'm very active in them. I give many talks for Sally Fallon. I think it's a wonderful organization, and he was a wonderful man. I read his book. Very compelling, and it's extremely interesting because he looked at a time when the flour and the sugar were coming in from the West and invading these places where people used to be eating these wholesome diets. So you had some of the people converting to this kind of, at that time, Western-style diet. This is back in the early parts of the 1900s, like 1930, 1920.
Mm-hmm.
And this Western diet was just getting introduced, and there was very little nutritional value in it. And he was seeing that these kids all had, you know, rotting teeth and crooked teeth and poor jaw structure and illness, you know, compared to the ones who were still eating the native diet. And then he studied the native diet to see what made it healthy, and he saw really two important things, I think. One was these fermented foods, which is really neat because that's allowing bacteria to get a head start on processing the food to make it easier for you to digest it. You convert it to lactate, convert the sugar to lactate, and lactate is a much easier fuel to digest. And you also, of course, help to supply the gut microbes when you're eating fermented foods that are still live culture. So that's really a good thing, to eat fermented foods. And then the high-fat diet, the butter. You know, he was very much in favor of wholesome butter. Of course, butter from grass-fed cows, you know, not butter from cows that are loaded up on GMO Roundup Ready corn and soy. So you have to be careful about eating organic
mm-hmm.
butter.
Yes.
Well, what do you think of his prescription in terms of recommending both cod liver oil fermented or otherwise and the butter oil together?
Right. Fantastic. I think cod liver oil would be terrific if you can trust it to be processed correctly. And
the thing is, you know, I'm a certified health nut, and I've read over 100 books on health the last 5 years, and I'm always looking, and I'm an old philosophy major, so the point is, you know, I don't really believe if you say X and Dr. Donna says Y and I say Z, then perhaps we can have an interesting discussion. The thing that has most interested me recently has been the role of the hormones, specifically the need for an extreme, almost a one-to-one ratio, if not more so, of omega-3 to omega-6.
Right. Very good point.
And the thing is, you know, like the one my ophthalmologist recommended a really excellent book called What Your Doctor May Not Have Told You About Heart Disease. And in this book, Dr. Mark Hewson indicates there's over 400 risk factors for heart disease, saturated mm-hmm. fat being just one.
Saturated fat is not a risk for heart disease, in my opinion.
Well,
actually.
I'm just saying, I'm quoting what the doctor said.
No, I know they all think that's true, but I just wanted to put that out there.
I know, but the point is, like, I'm just joining the discussion, and since you know, I like to recommend a website and a doctor who follows the same modus operandi. His name is Dr. Michael Greger, Greger, nutritionfacts.org. And he does what you do. He surveys the current medical metadata literature, and so I really trust this gentleman's methodology. And it's a very interesting website. He has no access to Grind, but the thing is, see, in my life, what I find really to be the wisest course is I take 9 heaping tablespoons of molecularly distilled fish oil every day.
Wow. Well, I will say, by the way, that I think whole fish is better than fish oil. And one of the things that might be a really important ingredient in fish is taurine. Taurine is a very healthy molecule and a source of sulfur.
I take taurine supplements.
Okay.
But see, the thing is, you know, I'd rather have it molecularly distilled. And some, you know, I mean, if I had the bucks, I would buy the algae-based fish oils.
Okay.
But see,
we have a lot of calls
okay, well,
behind
thank you.
You.
Cousin. Thanks,
so
Dr.
please,
thanks.
Thank
a lot.
You for your comments. Very
okay.
interesting.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Dr. Sinif. Thank you very much for taking these calls.
Are you welcome?
Please correct me if I'm mistaken. It's my understanding that the nucleus of each mammal cell releases superoxide dismutase and catalase, enzymes which gobble up the toxic poop of the mitochondria, also known as free radicals, and the damage by the free radicals is the oxidative stress within the cell.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, we are encouraged to eat or produce our own antioxidants to counter the damage, also known as the aging process.
Okay, good.
Now, in your last broadcast on KKCR, I thought I heard you say that glyphosate interferes with the efficiency of reducing free radicals by superoxide dismutase
yes.
and catalase.
I said that this time as well. I didn't clarify it. It is SOD, manganese-based SOD, that's disrupted, I suspect, by glyphosate due to its chelation of manganese. And that is a critical, critical role in reducing the damage to these free radicals. So, yes.
And is that in the paper that's about to be published?
It is. It definitely is.
Okay. I look forward to reading it.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. Some very interesting calls. You know, when I was also, we were discussing whole milk products and my investigation over the holidays. And reading about the balance, the balance of cholesterol, how it works in reducing cholesterol. And so.
Right. You know, I mean, I think eating saturated fat with cholesterol is actually really outstanding because then you've got the cholesterol right there, which is needed to transport fat. So you need cholesterol in the membrane of the LDL particle, and if it doesn't have enough cholesterol, it won't be able to protect itself from damage, for example, from fructose. So you've kind of got a double hit when you have a liver that's pulling in all this fructose, producing all this fat, and then not being able to come up with enough cholesterol to wrap the fat to produce healthy LDL particles. That's what's going to happen in the context of a statin drug, because the statin drug is going to disrupt the liver's ability to make cholesterol. But then if you eat cholesterol, you alleviate the liver from that burden. It can just use the cholesterol that you ate to keep the fats healthy.
Huh.
Anything else you want to talk about the importance of cholesterol in the body?
Oh, my God, it's so important. I mean, that's the thing that's so ironic. Everyone is so upset about high cholesterol, and cholesterol is one of the most important molecules in the body.
Mm-hmm.
It is really what distinguishes animals from plants, you know. Mm-hmm. We have cholesterol, and I think it's what's giving us mobility and is giving us a nervous system. These are two things that plants don't have. And I think that without the cholesterol, those would not work, which is obviously true. They're in all the membranes of all the cells, but especially in the brain. The brain has 25% of the body's cholesterol with only, is it 3% of the body's mass or 5%? It's much, much more cholesterol per cell in the brain than there is in other different cell types. So you need it in the brain, and it's what's going to protect you from Alzheimer's disease. You certainly don't want to get Alzheimer's. You know, that is a nasty disease.
Mm-hmm.
You want your brain to be working very well up until the end of your life.
Mm-hmm. So we were, before some of the callers, we were talking about the side effects of statins.
Yes.
And we were talking about muscle damage.
Yes, yes.
And you were saying that it also causes muscle weakness.
Right.
And elderly are falling more.
Right.
And
then, of course, it can cause, in the extreme case, rhabdomyolysis, which is a very serious problem. And that can be due to the breakdown of the muscle cells. And then the muscle cells are released into the blood, and the muscle debris clogs up the kidneys and can kill the kidneys and cause death. So rhabdomyolysis actually has a very high risk of death. And you can look at the statin side effect data and see that there's a lot of cases of rhabdomyolysis associated with statin drugs. Very, very scary. And so they stress the kidneys, which, of course, is really bad. Kidney failure in general is an epidemic right now, and that's connected to both the glyphosate and the statin drugs. Do we have a caller? Yeah. And there's all kinds of eye problems, for example, cataracts. I mean, statins cause lots of things that you might characterize as getting older. You know, so I say they make you get older faster. I think that's a really good characterization of statins. And cataracts is a good example. They've been shown to cause an increased risk to cataracts. And that's, again, I think, due to the insufficient cholesterol supply to the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
A listener asked, she's a very strict vegan, and how does she get her cholesterol and fat?
Right. Well, you can get fat from vegan diet. You get vegetable fat rather than animal fat. You won't get any cholesterol if you're a strict vegan. You won't get any cholesterol in your diet, which is just going to then put a bigger burden on your cells to produce it. I mean, luckily, our cells can produce cholesterol. It's a complicated 20 or 30-step process to produce cholesterol. It's not easy. And the liver, of course, is very busy doing lots of things. So if it has to also make cholesterol, that's going to distract it from some of its other tasks, such as processing fructose. So I do not recommend a cholesterol-free diet. Obviously, people can be healthy on a vegan diet, but I think it takes special effort. You just have to make sure that your systems are working very, very well. Make sure that all your food is organic. Eat whole foods. A vegetarian diet can have a lot of nutrients and nutritional value if you are eating wholesome, organic whole foods. In terms of minerals and vitamins, you can get those things. So, but you do have to put an extra burden on your cells to have to make their own cholesterol when you're not getting it from your diet.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller. Good afternoon.
Hey, is this me?
Yes, it's you.
Okay. Great show. Thank you for all this valuable information and a great presentation of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick statement and a question. I've also heard from a few MDs that not only are these cholesterol numbers overinflated in order to get people on these drugs, but also high cholesterol is not only neutral, but that it's very healthy for people, and most tribal people have
right.
it. And it's what gives you longevity, so for whatever that's worth.
Absolutely. Actually, that's a very good point, because I've seen articles that have done studies on, for example, there was a 17-year study on the elderly, and they found that the ones who, they had them in three groups, the lowest, the middle, and the highest cholesterol, and the ones in the lowest group had the worst prognosis. They had more physical frailty, more mental decline, and earlier death. So
really?
You should be happy if you have high cholesterol and you're, I mean, I think you should always not worry about your cholesterol, but I think if you're elderly and you've got high cholesterol, you should be happy.
Yeah, I've been selling that to my parents for years. So here's my question. My mom's in her 70s, very good nutritional background, clean whole foods, and she's got a good regimen of calcium and magnesium, good quality and good balance that she's taking, but still battling osteoporosis. So if she's in her late 70s, what kind of a dose of manganese do you suspect I should add to what she's doing?
That's not how I would do it, actually. I would make sure she would get out into the sunlight. The sunlight will definitely strengthen her bones and make sure she gets, you know, plenty of natural vitamin D from the sun.
Right.
And without sunglasses and without sunscreen.
Right.
And then to eat foods containing sulfur, because you need sulfate to make the bones healthy. I mentioned the chondroitin sulfate, which is crucial to the health of the bones and will help them to retain the calcium. If you don't have enough sulfate, then you'll start leaching calcium from the bones and throwing it into the blood vessels, and you'll get calcified blood vessels, which is very bad, and weakened bones. So it's sulfur that you need. Eating foods containing sulfur, such as garlic, onions, and, of course, seafood, eggs, you know, these are all really good sources. Cheese of sulfur, these are all great foods.
Broccoli, kale.
That's right, all the cruciferous vegetables. These are all great sources of sulfur and really great foods. Eat those foods, get the sunlight, go organic, and, of course, eat whole foods, organic whole foods. To me, that's the best way to improve the bones.
Okay, that makes sense, but as far as adding some manganese daily, there's no suggested dosage?
Of manganese. Now, manganese is tricky. I would not recommend taking it as a mineral, because everything, in fact, when you're taking it in a high concentration like that in isolation, is dangerous, you know, because manganese is very, very difficult to manage. And our paper talks about that, the paper that's coming out. We describe the interesting paradox that manganese is both toxic and deficient at the same time because of the glyphosate. The glyphosate causes it to pile up in the liver, and then the liver transports it to the brainstem along the vagus nerve. So you end up with an excess dose of manganese in the liver and the brainstem, and then you have manganese deficiency everywhere else. So you've got both toxicity and deficiency at the same time. Very, very tricky.
I'm glad I asked about that. So you're just saying get that through nutrition.
Right.
Somehow the sulfates are connected to the making of manganese? Is that what
I think that sulfate works closely with manganese, in fact, in terms of providing electricity to the body, particularly to the neurons. So the neuronal circuitry, I think, depends upon the manganese and the sulfate. This is research that we're doing and trying to clarify. It's the water that's really, really important, and the sulfate makes the water into a special form called structured water, and then the manganese provides an electromagnetic field that provides currents, and that's how you deliver electricity to the cells. So both the muscles and the neurons depend upon these electrical circuits to work. That's why you need the sulfate to keep your muscles and your brain healthy.
Great. That was very helpful. Thank you so much.
And I would add, in terms of osteoporosis, I would want to check and make sure that she's digesting and absorbing her food well. So that's something that I would look
Absolutely.
Into.
Yeah, and the probiotics are something I'm working with. And when she visits the island, Dr. Kaplan, I'm going to have her come and visit you so you can help us out with that.
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Well, Drs. Donna Kaplan and Dr. Stephanie Seneff, it's great to see you.
It is
and
great to be back.
Let's give the listeners information, website,
right.
et cetera.
Okay, yes, you can Google my name. You might even be able to just Google Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F, because it's a fairly uncommon name, or Stephanie Seneff, and you'll find all kinds of stuff. I've done many radio interviews and videos, YouTube videos. I have a lot of papers. If you look at my website, which is http://people.com, CSAIL, that's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, CSAIL, .mit.edu/SENEFF, SANEF. That's my webpage. I got a lot of stuff on there, various slides and presentations and papers and a lot of stuff. So you can browse through there and find probably more than you want to know about, but, you know, a lot of stuff.
And Donna, thank you so much. And what about your information?
You can reach me at 828-6153.
Thank you.
And, or www.AlohaFamilyHealthKauai.com.
Good. And up next, my good friend Richard with One World Radio, and we're out of time. So
thank you so much, Cousin Rich,
nice
for
you.
Making this show happen.
Thank
and
you.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. Thank you for all the important work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Really. Yes. And thank you for joining us today. And we'll see you in the summer, I hope.
Right. I'm going to be here all summer. I'm so thrilled. The first time, actually, that I'm able to come for the entire summer.
Ooh,
yeah.
Wow.
I love Kauai. You guys are very fortunate to have such a beautiful place to live. It's just wonderful.
We are.
Thank you. Well, go well, everyone.
Thank you.
When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning rounds in morning Morgantown. We'll rise up early with the sun to ride the bus while everyone is yawning and the day is young in morning Morgantown. To make you smile, to wear.